inside, come inside. This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
You're listening to Living Clean and Sober on City of Angels Recovery Radio.
Here's Johnny!
And with the host of our show, Johnny Rides.
You are talking to a man who has laughed in the face of death, sneered at doom, and chuckled at catastrophe.
His partner in crime and co-host, Ken McDonald.
What is thy bidding, my master?
You know, before this is over, I'm going to need a whole lot of serious therapy.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
And our engineer, Art Ackerman.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
In Kansas anymore.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Hey, come on. We're superheroes. What could happen?
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to City of Angels, Living Clean and Sober, Johnny Rags and my co-host, Ken McDonald.
Old McDonald.
Yeah, he's old. And my ever-capable engineer, Art Ackerman.
Good
Hello,
morning.
Art.
Good morning.
How are you? We got a great show for you guys tonight. You can go on our website, cityofangelsnj.org, see the amazing things that we do. We have all kind of stuff for people, and just go to that website and check it out. If you want to give us a call, 609-241-7103. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know if you agree or disagree with one of our guests or have any comments or parting thoughts. Again, that number is 609-241-7103. Coming to you from the garden spot of the world, Hightstown, New Jersey.
Lovely Hightstown, New Jersey.
Lovely.
All five blocks.
We were discussing that at dinner. Everyone in here.
Was tonight Menino's? No.
Yeah, we might as well give them a plug. We're there.
They should sponsor our show. They should.
Yeah, they should. Maybe we'll talk to them next week about that. Anyway, welcome, guys. We have Robbie Strauber, an interventionist and friend of mine. Right next to me is John Becker. Welcome, John. Thanks for coming out. And the lovely Mary on to my left.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Thanks for coming, guys. All right, what's going on? Did you have a happy Father's Day?
Actually, I was sick all day yesterday. We went to Atlantic City Friday and Saturday.
Nice.
And I woke up and I was sick like all day yesterday. It was horrible. Yeah. But it was a nice day.
You weren't sick because you lost a lot, right?
No, I walk away, man. It's time to walk the boardwalk sometimes, you know?
I hear you. So what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Things are good. Thanks, John. I appreciate you inviting us to the show. And I know it's been a long time coming. And I was happy to be a part of another show a couple months ago. But good to be here with you.
Life is good. My friend. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I really appreciate you guys coming out and taking the time because, of course, we know that the disease of addiction is killing people. So all of us are involved in this fight. So what better than to have you on the show to talk about how we're trying to fight it?
Absolutely. Thrilled to be here, John.
Thanks. I'm thrilled to have you. I really am. I'm really glad you're here. Mary, how are you?
Good.
What's going on with Mary today?
Today?
Well, whenever.
I don't know. Just hanging in there, still clean, still sober, working in the field, trying to help people, trying to raise my crazy 2-year-old.
Ooh,
who was home from school today.
Ooh.
Sick. Yeah, yeah. So.
That's always good.
Yeah.
Mine's going to be home from school every day after tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank God daycare has summer camps.
That's a good, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And of course, me having an adult child. We won't say how old she
is. I have those too.
Yeah. 34 she just turned last week. Wow. Can't believe
they're old, John.
I am old. I am.
Young at heart.
That's right. And Robbie and I were talking before you guys got there that if I believed that I would have lived this long, I probably would have paid more attention to my own life. But I didn't, so what are you going to do?
You're making up for it now.
Yeah, man. My life is incredible. I mean, you know, what do I have to complain about, really? I mean,
absolutely.
In the grand scheme of things, I have an incredible life. I have friends like you guys. Who got it better than that? I mean, for real, you know? It's amazing. It's amazing. So, talk away, guys. What do you want to talk about? Want to talk about the Bill Cosby verdict?
No.
You know what? I'm so tired of hearing about that.
But it's not a verdict.
I don't think you're done hearing about it just yet.
No.
No, we're not. But, you know, there's a lot of things going on. Last week, we dedicated the show to Maria, my dear friend who lost her battle with this thing, and it just continues to happen, you know. And then, you know, as recovering people and all that, I mean, I always question myself, you know, what could I do more, how could I do it better, you know, them kind of things, or how could we do it better, what could we do as a team? How can we help more people? How can we reach more people? And that's what we try to do with the show. We want to reach people. You know, and Kenny always says, "Who we miss you, Ken. Call in if you can."
We do. In case you forgot the number, 609-241-7103.
Maybe he'll give us the word of the week over the phone. How about that?
That'll work.
We got this segment. It's called Word of the Week because I like words. I'm a word guy, you know. And every week he... Either he's inspired by the show because we do it like 8:45, or he just has this word that he picked out, you know, that weekend or something. And Artie's got a whole thing to do with that too. So.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Well, John, I'm sorry to hear about your your loss.
Thank you.
You know, I think we're all in the business of saving lives here, and you know, unfortunately, sometimes we don't always get to do that. You know, and the grave reality of this disease is that, you know, some will pass. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that, you know, I do the same thing, you know, if we do lose somebody. And I just heard I lost somebody today, too, that I had done some work with. And, you know, you look back and you reflect and you say, you know, have I done everything that I possibly can? And, you know, I think it's about what do we have at our disposal. And, you know, we're people just like anybody else, and we're trying to help other people. And, you know, sometimes we can't control all that. And, you know, so, you know, when I lost, you know, this person today and got notice of that, and, you know, I went back and started to think about, you know, what did we do? And, you know, when I got the telephone call, I picked it up. When I was asked to go and help, I was there. And, you know, that person ended up, you know, had some struggles, but got his family back for the last 6 months. And, you know, you reflect why. And as a person in long-term recovery, you know, why me? Why do I get this gift of life today? And, you know, I had a great sponsor once, Ron, and God rest his soul, say, why not you? And, you know, I think that's just it. You know, we have to wake up and we're going to suffer these losses, and, you know, but we got to continue to suit up and show up and keep fighting this fight. And, you know, what I love about something like this is that we get to an opportunity to be able to all work together. not one of us ever have the answer, you know. And I think if we ever start to really think that we do, if it's a treatment center or if it's, you know, an outreach coordinator or a therapist or an interventionist, you know, and we operate in a bubble, I think we're going to get in trouble. So, you know, in a forum like this where people can call in and touch base and share their concerns and share their victories, you know, that's what gets me up in the morning to keep on trucking.
Good insight. And I'm sorry to hear about your loss.
Thanks.
And that's, you know, I remember, because this has been, you know, years and years ago when I was clean. You know, like I said, I got clean in 88. And it wasn't like this. You know, it wasn't awful. I mean, this is awful. You know, every so often you'd hear of somebody like that. They had some time with their families. They were reunited. Good things happened, and then boom. But, you know, and I sat with Kevin. We had lunch, and I told him that it affects me a whole lot more these days. Like this Maria girl, two times into treatment, and we were getting her ready to come into a recovery house. Of course, she had to be clean, and she would call my fiance every day and let her know what she was doing. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, she called her every morning. Friday morning, she called her, but then that was the last she heard of her. And, you know, the sad part is she was excited about coming into the recovery house and getting her life together. She was excited about that her daughter was happy that she was doing it. And she died alone. And that's the sad part. You know, she was in a shelter. And it's just, you know, I was at the funeral with a friend of mine. And I just, you know, how you want to be cool and you want to wipe the tears and go, you know, I'm okay. I just let it come out. And I wept hard. And I just, when I heard about it, it's like I got punched in the stomach. And not everyone affects me like that. You know what I mean? Just that one.
I guess it's just something you never get numb to. It just doesn't stop, you know?
Right.
And it gets more personal and more personal. It's more people right. that you're involved with. It's somebody who you were trying to help. And, you know,
right.
the inevitable happens. And it's hard. It's hard to go on.
Yeah.
But we find hard, right? We find a way.
Exactly. And that's why we do what we do. Yeah.
To piggyback off what you said, John, I think what makes it even harder is it seems like more people are dying from overdoses than ever before, and because the drugs are more powerful. They've crept into every area of society, so there's no, you know, group that you can point to and mm-hmm. say, you know, we need to focus on this group and get the word out, get in touch with these people and provide services to this group. It's everyone. You know, being in recovery myself, I was an opioid addict, and you know, I was a police officer, and I became an addict. So, you know, if it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. And all we can keep doing is, you know, When I hear about the loss of somebody that I know, or just anyone really, in addition to the sadness I feel, I also get a sense of gratitude that, okay, I'm okay today. You know, that's not me today.
Right.
You know, and it kind of helps me refocus and say, all right, you know, because we always hear about the overdoses, right? They're you know, it's a big tragedy, and it is. I think sometimes we have to remind ourselves of the successes, the people that have gotten their lives back. And, you know, when we lose somebody, it brings us down, but it shouldn't stop us from doing the work that we do.
Exactly. And, you know, the end, that rainbow, the joy that you see when you said 6 months, you know, no one, who's to say anyway? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that was good, and that was granted. So, you know, you have to extract some kind of gratitude out of it and say, okay, at least that happened. You know? And I tell you, I just, sometimes it's overwhelming. You know? But that's why we do this, and not to be crepe hangers and all that. You know, there's joy in recovery.
Well, doing this show is with the hope of, you know, to see people that are actively in recovery and have their lives back is the motivation to continue doing what we're doing. I mean.
Yeah, thanks. All right. I agree with you. I think, you know, it is all about hope and, you know, these minor victories that might come through. I mean, recovery is hard, right? And, you know, it's chronic, it's progressive, it's relapsing disease, and at the end of the day, you know, we all need to band together, right? Because once we isolate and once we stop living in a solution and whatever that might be, then, you know, we the problem starts looking a lot better. And sure. You know, and whoever's on the phone who might be struggling or listening to us and, you know, who needs help, I mean, there is a lot of help out there. You know, especially with what City of Angels does, and, you know, the folks that I'm sitting here in this room with, you know, represent other organizations, and, you know, there's ways that we can get people involved to come up with some different solutions and look at things differently, you know, and if we keep looking at the same thing and keep doing the same thing, you know, to remedy an issue and it's not working, you know, we need help. And, you know, there's a lot of great peer-to-peer programs that are out there and different organizations that can come alongside with, and not just for the individual struggling with substance use disorder, but, you know, their families and friends right. that are suffering along right. with. And, you know, just encourage people to reach out and keep talking and learn everything that you possibly can about this. And, you know, I'm confident that, you know, there is a solution. You know, not like I said, not any one of us has that, but I think collectively, you know, we're going to be able to get ahead of this. And, you know, the unfortunate part is, like we talked about, some people are going to be lost along the way. And, you know, what are the lessons that are learned from that? And, you know, how can their memories be incorporated into somebody else's recovery? You know, that's a very difficult thing to really pull together and accept, but I think it's a necessary thing.
Absolutely.
I was gathering some statistics for a little short movie that I'm working on, and you know, we lost 500,000 people since 2000.
Jeez.
Wow.
500,000. And currently there are 750,000 active heroin addicts in the United States.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's
those
staggering.
Numbers are just nuts.
That's just mind-blowing.
But I think what's so important to talk about is to let people know, whether it be the family members or the addict, that, like, it's okay to ask for help. You know, because we're not going to there's not, like, some magic, you know, chart that shows us, like, oh, this one in that state, you know, in that town is using and need help, and we're going to go, you know, to their house and do an intervention or try and help them, like, the biggest thing is, like, it's okay to ask for help. You have to ask. The family members, you know, need to ask for help. Like, this doesn't have to be, it's not a shameful thing, you know, in today's society. It affects everyone. Everyone. I don't know anybody who doesn't know somebody who's struggling,
Who knows somebody who knows somebody.
Right.
Everybody knows somebody, at least where I come from, in my experience, somebody is struggling with addiction, a family member, a friend of a friend, you know, and this has to start to be one of those things where, you know, even if it's not for yourself, even if it's for someone else, like, you have to speak up about it. And it's just about, and there's still, of course, like, that stigma, you know, about addiction and how it's a little bit, you know, within families, within tight circles, within communities, that is a shameful thing. Nobody wants to talk about it. But that's why I love, you know, what we all do, because we're all in recovery and we're going to talk about it, you know, whether it be in meetings, whether it be in our jobs, whether it be on radio shows, you know, and just let people know, like, we've all been there, you know, and now, like, we made it through that. So, like, just talk about it and get, like, not the solution, but the hope, the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, that if we all sitting here can do it, that anybody can, but you got to take that first step, you know, and it, you don't have to be the addict to take that first step. I have family members who reach out to me a lot before the actual addict does, you know, and I'm sure everyone sitting here just like me will go to the app. I don't ever not answer my phone. You know, I don't ever not answer
the,
my phone.
The first
died
ones
one
that
time.
Are affected are your family members, right? So, yeah. Of course, absolutely. They're going to be the first ones that see it. They're going to be right. The first ones that notice the swinging behavior.
they know your
all
patterns.
Those red flags. Ka-bing, ka-bing, ka-bing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're the first one to notice them as a family member, right?
Yeah.
And it's really been my experience that the families know the most, right? I mean, we can help anybody raises their hand or comes to a meeting and says, hey, I need some help. And, you know, I think that's admirable. But oftentimes, and especially in the work that I do as an interventionist, we don't get that, right? So we've got the families saying, we've tried everything. What do we do from here? And, you know, I get maybe even more excited about walking into a home where an individual is not ready to go and get treatment. And watch the dynamic shift mm-hmm. from, you know, this obstinance to, you know, get out of my home to, you know, you're not changing me. And then, you know, with doing some of the family work beforehand and messaging in the right way out of love and concern, watching, you know, the fact and training the families and educating them on stigma and how that affects, you know, our message that we give to our loved one, you just watch all that melt away because, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous states that, you know, alcoholism is the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde disease, and that's the same for drug addiction. And, you know, the fact of the matter is our loved one's still there. They're just underneath lots of layers mm-hmm. of defense and,
years I called my daughter abuse. Reagan when she was in the throes of her addiction.
So, you know, to watch some of that melt away in a few hours and, you know, really show that person, hey, you know what, you're of value and we love you and we know that you don't want to be in this situation. I think, you know, that's extremely rewarding. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we're dealing with sometimes the hardest thing to overcome, which is God's free will for us all, right? And so they don't always end in success, or it doesn't always end in somebody to go into treatment or get into recovery. But, you know, at the same time, it does institute or begin change for those families on how they interact right. within their system.
And I'll tell you, we've seen a lot of that, you know, in the amount of kids that we've lost, right? And just this year alone, since January. I mean, the parents that have lost a child don't sit back and bury their head in their pillow. You know, I mean, they have every right to do that, but they don't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They get involved. They try to educate or save one kid or, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, they try to be more involved with stuff. I was amazed, I think, at Mrs. Oswald. Her son was Andrew Oswald. She lost him in January. 2 weeks later, she was like at our addiction shoot, remember? Mm-hmm. Over by the river.
Yeah.
She really wants to be involved. She was there the day we had the governor and the White House and all that stuff. So they really want to get involved and give back and see something change.
Well, family is so important. You know, I'm going to kind of do a shameless plug here, but it ties into what I want to say.
Shameless plugs are allowed.
John, you know, I run a first responder program here in New Jersey for advanced health and education. The program's Frontline Responder Services. And Mary, it ties into what you were saying as far as the stigma and getting the families involved, right? First responders, you know, the last place that the dysfunction shows up for policemen, firemen, EMT, veterans, whatever, is at the workplace. You know, they'll hide it there. But you talk to their wife or their children or their husband, and they can tell you, just like Rob just said. And it's so, you know, we want our addicts and alcoholics to ask for help, but they don't always do that. Mm-hmm. You know, usually in my world, they usually come to me when they've gotten in trouble at work, trouble at home, or trouble with the law. And that's police, fire, and EMS. So, and that applies, I think, to all of society. So we really need the families to get involved, and especially if you're, you know, someone in recovery and you have a family member that's struggling, you know, don't hesitate to reach out and get help and make that call.
Yeah. I think that in most cases, in my experience, there's always a family dynamic. There's always where once you sit down with the family and you talk to them and you do some, like he was saying, family work, get some family history and figure out where's the disconnect here, you know, and sit down and talk with them. It's, you know, for me at least, a little bit easier to kind of meet the addict where they're at. And that's been my biggest thing, you know, in doing what I'm doing. Like, in meetings and stuff like that, it's a big, you know, if you want help, ask for help. Get your hand up and ask for help, and we will help you, you know. But in my life, outside of meetings, my whole thing is, you know, meet them where they're at. Go the extra mile, you know. Meet the addict where they're at. Meet the family members where they're at.
Those familiar terms to you, John?
What?
I'm just testing my student here.
But that's been my motivation, you know, is I'm gonna get into your life. I'm gonna help you. And until they tell me, like, you know, I absolutely don't want your help, you know, I never really get that response. I never really, once I'm in there and I'm speaking with the family and the addict, whether it be separately or together, you know, most of the time there's something that pops up, you know, that makes sense, and sure, something clicks within them, you know.
Right. Well, that's it, you know, and a lot of families are shocked when their loved ones are finally getting help, and then you recommend a family group or something like that, and they say, well, he's away now, everything's mm-hmm. cool. You know,
and that's what they, what when mean? Their loved one is away, they need to be educating themselves and learning exactly. about addiction,
and recovering
and
their themselves,
and recovery, and all that.
And they
it's all part of the plan.
And one of the neat things is most treatment centers today have some sort of family program mm-hmm.
right.
to provide that support and education, so that when your loved one comes home, you know.
Yeah, when my daughter was at Turning Point, every Saturday when you went up there, it was family. You had to sit through the 2 hours of, mm-hmm. yep. I mean, to me it was worth it. I had already seen most of that, but I thought it was good education for those that were new to, you know what I mean, addiction, and their loved one was up there. So they probably wouldn't have got that education had they not gotten that there. I mean, we offer that through City of Angels, you know, our family program on Wednesdays and Friday nights. Like 3 hours, I think, all together total, and there's no charge for that. But you know, there's a lot of family programs out there. You should go educate mm-hmm. yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a shame. I feel like there's not a shame. There's awesome family groups, and there's a right. lot of them. What I yeah. meant is, it's a shame because in my experience, like once the family member's in treatment, I stress family groups to every family member so much, and rarely do they go. Rarely do they go. And I even will tell them, like, you need to go. You need to go. Because you... Now, listen, at the end of the day, it's up to the addict if they want to... Like, people can go through stuff and they can come home, you know, maybe to not the best environment like I did, you know? Like, I didn't... When I got out of treatment, I didn't, like, you know, go to a sober living. I didn't go to an Oxford or anything like that. I went home to the same place that I used at my entire life. And I was okay. That's not always everybody's experience.
That's not what we recommend.
Right. Right.
Seriously.
But if the families go to family group while the family member is in treatment, you know, they're going to learn what to expect when they get out. They're going to learn what needs to change in the family dynamic. They're going to learn, you know, what could possibly trigger them, what to kind of let roll off their back, what emotions this person's going to have when they get out of treatment. Because, you know, when you're in early recovery, you're an emotional roller coaster, and sometimes, like, you know, people come home and the addict is still very emotional, and the family members are like, oh my God, I don't know what to do.
That's why we just don't recommend that you go right home when you're coming out. I mean, you should transition into sober living, and maybe at some point in time you can go back home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not recommended for most people in the beginning. my daughter we brought home, you know what I mean? And she did live in sober living for a while, but, you know, she did end up eventually coming home. I just think it keeps you honest.
Right? Yeah.
It keeps you around like-minded people. It keeps you accountable. And it's going to keep you going to meetings and doing the things you're supposed to be doing, right, when you're in recovery.
Well, continuum of care is always the best way to go.
I think it's important to recognize something. I mean, it's not just the loved one that seeks treatment that is getting into recovery. It's also the families that need to get into recovery. I will speak to some family group dynamics. I was able to do some research on this at another treatment center that I had worked at, and we did find that it took between 4 and 6 months before a person who's, you know, just dropped their loved one off for the first time in treatment to actually accept a family group type dynamic. And it's very, very difficult, and some are better than others, just like you know, recovery meetings are peer-to-peer. Yeah. And, you know, if it's not about going to a family group for a family member, then, you know, how do they partner with a therapist or maybe another peer or somebody, another family member has been through all of this to be able to provide those checks and balances? You know, the key is and Art said it, you know, when families drop their loved ones off, they expect, you know, oh, they're going to be gone for 30 days. That's not always the case. And, you know, and by the time they come out, you know, this should be fine. And that's definitely not the case. So, you know, when we deal with something like this, then, you know, how do we partner with those families that may not be willing to do that? And how do we, you know, really encourage them to find their own recovery that's going to look different than their loved ones?
Right.
And get them prepared, because Art, you know, you had even shared it with your experience. I don't care if you go to a program for 30, 60, 90 days and then, you know, or go to a different state for another year in a recovery house, you're coming home at some point, right, be it Thanksgiving or Christmas or, you know, whenever. And, you know, what's going to happen when they encounter those sights and smells and those triggers that we talk about, within those dynamics? And, you know, how to, you know, treatment's important to address that with the individual, but then it's also important for the families to understand maybe what they're going through. So one thing I found that's so important is building relationships, right? We can have the best treatment center with the best family programs, but we all have good forgetters. And I don't care if you go for 5 days and, you know, you have 50 hours of education about addiction, you know, when your loved one comes back, that tends to go right out the window. Mm-hmm. And these patterns have existed probably a lot longer than even the chemicals had been in their loved one. So, you know, how do we get family members to recognize their role? And it's not to do recovery for their loved ones, but it's to provide accountability and support. And what does that look like? So, you know, a lot of the work that I do is not just in the hours before an intervention, during the intervention. We also discuss things ongoing. And if that's 30 days after treatment, 60 days a year, I have people I've been working with for 3 or 4 years, you know, and I became that resource for them. And, you know, the fact is that that's really what we need to be able to do. And, you know, not just in the 2 hours before, you know, they get to have lunch and see their loved one. Everybody's going to do that. You know, where do we get the engagement and become of value to families and their loved ones for the long term? That's hard to do.
It's very hard to do.
I agree, Rob. And, you know, one of the important things is, when you're looking for somewhere to place your loved one, these are the things that you want to think about, right? Or at least hopefully have somebody explain to you the importance of that aftercare, that follow-up, that partnership, because, you know, the families are as sick as the, you know, the person.
Sicker.
Going in, usually.
Yeah.
But denial.
We have much higher expectations than we're in denial, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've enabled it. In a lot of cases, we've enabled the behavior for so long.
It's ingrained.
It's ingrained in us. You know, it's that dynamic. And a lot of times what we see happen is the client, the addict or alcoholic, comes home And they've gotten better, and the family hasn't. And then, you know, they're expecting the same behaviors, or they're acting the same way they did before their loved one went away, and that creates a whole new set of problems.
The definition of insanity, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You know.
Well, most of the time for the families, it's a control thing. A lot of times.
That's why I really have to say, you know, it's not recommended to come right home from treatment. Besides, you don't get it that long. If you can get a month, man, you're blessed, right?
Yeah.
You know, in today's environment, I know people that just got 2 weeks and then they're in sober living, or they're not even getting treatment. You know, they have to go to IOP, and, you know, we have to set them up with some type of a sober living arrangement, you know what I mean, so that they can go to IOP. And how hard is that? I mean, it still costs money to go to a sober living house. You got to pay for that. And if you don't have a job, you know, you need somebody that's either, you know, paying that bill for you or scholarshipping you or something along the road to continue your recovery. So it's really hard for people without insurance.
Well, you know, sober living is so important. Even the first responders that I work with, you know, we'll place them in sober living when it's appropriate.
Right.
You know, especially if they've, you know, they're not welcome home, first of all, a lot of times, or, you know, they've just created such a dynamic at home that the best thing for them to do is to be in sober living. And then, and I'm talking, you know, not 20-year-old kids, you know, 40, 45-year-old adults going into sober living, and it's what they need. It's very important.
It's part of the process, right?
The healing process.
The healing process. You know, it takes a while. Even in my daughter, I mean, it took, I'm telling you, 18 months before I even started to see her somewhat come back to gratitude, you know? I mean, thinking about somebody other than herself. 18 months, you know? I mean, and it's been a great progress and a great joy to watch that happen. But, man, you sit back and you go, I don't think I'm ever going to see the day that this is going to happen.
Here she is.
She's my young one. She hasn't given me any trouble yet.
How old?
She's taking this all in, too.
Yeah, I just,
City of Angels, give us a call, 609-241-7103.
And don't forget, you can call in, 609-241-7103.
So we're all on the same page with that topic. You know, a little bit about you guys, if you want to share. How was it? What happened? What your life is like now? People need to hear.
I don't think
something.
You have enough time for that.
Well, you know, we could do a little snippet, you know.
Give us the 30-second commercial.
I'll go first.
Oh, is it the 2-minute commercial? That's
sure.
Yeah, this way people get to know,
okay,
you know, and love you.
So, my name's John Becker. I am a grateful recovering addict. At 41 years of age, I had some medical issues, started taking pain medication, became an addict. And as a police officer, I started to do things that civilians aren't supposed to do, certainly not police officers. Eventually got caught, went to treatment, went back to school, got my bachelor's in behavioral health counseling, my master's degree, and for the last 5 years, I've been working with the first responder population, providing, you know, residential and IOP treatment for them. I work for Advanced Health and Education right here in New Jersey, up in Eatontown. And the name of our program is Frontline Responder Services.
John, do you find a lot of, I mean, I'd imagine as a first responder, they are just coming across some horrible things, right, that they have to deal with every day and absorb in. I mean, I know I can only take so much, you know what I mean, and I break down at some point in time. I mean, you can only absorb so much of that. So.
Sure, and that's often a big part of the substance abuse and the you know, the dysfunctional behavior. Most first responders that come into treatment have some sort of trauma that's unresolved. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost universal, because what happens is, just like everybody, they self-medicate. Right. You know, it's easier to wish it away or, you know, numb it out than it is to deal with it. And first responders aren't supposed to have problems, right? You know, they're the helpers. So there's a message that they get from themselves, from the community, from the media, that they're supposed to be perfect. And when they're not, you know, it's very hard for them to ask for help, and they try to hide.
And you know what? I have to believe that most of them are perfect in the public eye. But, you know, when you go home, again, you can only take so much, right? I mean, absolutely, it has to get released some way, somehow.
Yeah, self-care is one of the biggest things. I do a lot of trainings around the country, and one of the things that I really touch on is the lack of self-care in the first responder fields. There's just not a whole lot of it emotionally, right. Emotional and psychological self-care. So,
come to think of it, anything that has to begins with self can't be good. That's my problem, self. You know?
Yeah.
I was shocked when they told me, you have to lose, your self has... Self has to die.
Yep.
So what are you talking about?
Maybe reborn again.
But they were right.
Absolutely.
Daily. Yep. Have to lose myself into the spiritual path, which we call the steps.
That's right.
You know? And then when you get that joy...
Elevator's broken, take the steps.
That's right.
Nice.
That's what everybody hears from this guy.
Well, you know, one of the topics, right, that we talked about too, John, was getting involved with peers, right? Peer groups and peer support. And with the first responder community, what we found is, you know, having peer-driven treatment really works. You know, our program, you know, designed by first responders, you know, first responders work at our treatment center and provide the services. It's been fantastic, and you know, we're not the only game in the in town, so there's a lot of places available for these first responders to go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And as you were talking, I'm thinking there has to be big time trauma going on that is either pushed under the rug or numbed out, like you said, or
I mean,
just
look at the number of overdose calls alone. I'm sure that they have to go on now that, you know, that wasn't so much in the past, right? I mean,
nope. Yeah, and the thing is, you know, the traumas, it's usually not one big incident that takes the first responders out. It's that cumulative effect.
Right. It's over and over.
And they're just pushing it aside. And I don't care if you work in New York City or Hightstown, New Jersey. Over your career, you're going to see things.
Right.
And, you know, some people are able to process that and really... It doesn't impact them, but trauma is very individual.
Right.
And some of us, you know, it impacts us. And if we don't treat it, it's going to come out sideways.
It's the human factor.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Let's hear from the left side of the room here.
I'm Mary McGregor.
Hi, Mary McGregor. How
are I've you? Been good. I've been in recovery since 2014, a little over 3 years now. Just to say, like, a little bit about myself, I was born an addict, you know. From day one, I couldn't get enough of anything. I was a troubled kid. I didn't do well in school. I was always getting kicked out, always suspended, always in trouble. I never cared about anything but myself. And obviously, you know, that rings bells for anybody else in recovery, because
no.
We're just no, not at all. Because we're just self-centered. We are just self-centered, and that's how I was my entire life. And then, you know, back in 2014, I went to treatment. I got out. I only went to treatment once. You know, and I got really, really involved in recovery. I got really, really involved in my own recovery. I put the work in. I definitely, you know, through doing step work and through doing the work and kind of dealing with my own trauma, getting help for that in the recovery process and also with outside help, kind of brought me today to where I'm at is, you know, I'm still in recovery. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. I'm a mother. You know, I'm a good mother, which I never thought, like, back when I was using, you know, was always a huge fear of mine. Like, being a parent, you really got to be selfless. Like, you really, really have to. And that is, like, beyond what we're capable of as addicts, is, like, being selfless. And being a mother has taught me so much about it is not about me. ever. You know, never is it about me. You know, not at That's any right. moment. Yeah. Not at any moment. I have a 2-year-old and she runs the show. She runs the show. I'm not in charge.
You
know?
If you forget that for a second, she'll let you know.
Absolutely. She will let me know. But it has taught me so much about love and compassion, not only for just human beings, but also for addicts. Looking back to how I used to be and how I am now has really been able to help me help other people. It's really just things that I've learned about myself has been able to help me help other addicts and like not be judgmental and be loving and caring to everybody. Because we all, you know, addicts, we all struggle with similar things, but we all come from different places. You know, and like you said, there's a whole first responders, you know, that struggle with things that I've never, you know, had to deal with. And then there's, you know, people who've dealt with things like from childhood trauma that I have had to deal with and then things that I have no clue about. You know, so it's definitely helped me open my eyes to as many, like, you know, forms of addiction and forms of suffering that we all have gone through, you know, in different levels of our addiction and, you know, in our lives. But I don't know, today I'm happy. I'm blessed, and I wouldn't change anything that I've ever been through for anything. I've been able to take a lot of negative things and turn it into a positive, which I thought I could do in active addiction, but I was so delusional like that. None of that was actually really true. Like, you know, I thought I was untouchable and like the best person ever. And really people hated me and I hated myself, you know, and today I've learned to love myself, love other people. I absolutely love my job. I love my career. I love my life and my family. And, you know, I never thought for me, and I hope that if there's anyone listening out there, you know, and I spoke for H&I out in PA the other week, and I felt the need to like share this, that like, I want people to know that they're worth it, you know, that they're worth a better life. And even though you can't see the end game, even though like you can't see where you're going to be in 10 years, just know that you can be in a better place. You don't know how to get there yet, but start doing the right things, start asking for help, start accepting help, and things will eventually get better and better.
And if you want help, there is help out there yes. for you.
Yes.
In many different ways, shapes, and forms. You have to take that, make the first call, right? To pick up the phone and dial 10 numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And
we know how hard that is.
How difficult can it be to dial 10 digits?
It can be some of the hardest things.
Heaviest thing in the world.
That's for sure. My name is Rob Strauber. I'm a person in long-term recovery, and for me, that means I haven't had the need for a mind-altering chemical since October 10th, 2007. I say that because I want to represent a solution and not the problem. And I certainly was part of the problem for quite a long time. And I blew through a marriage, almost lost my son, was close to losing my home. You know, I just reached a point where I couldn't control the substances anymore. And, you know, I went into treatment because I wanted my wife and my life back. And I didn't get either one of those the way that I wanted to have them, and thank God for that. Through the recovery process, I've been able to find a God, and through finding a God, I was able to find a church. And walking into that church, I met a Sunday school teacher who would turn out to be my wife. She had two beautiful daughters. And, you know, they've been calling me daddy for a long time. And we had ours 6 years ago. So I just want to give a shout out to my wife, Sarah, and my kids, Alex, Bobby, Jane, Caroline, and Ben. You know, my wife, who has no problems kind of cutting me down to size from time to time.
That's what they do. It's part of their job description.
Yeah. I do need it. I can't stand it, but I do need it. But recovery has given me so much more. I mean, to be able to purchase a new home and have an opportunity to be part of a solution. I've been in this business about 6 years, and I used to run clubs, country clubs, for a living, and I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing, and I started to work in a recovery house, and I think I was then shown that, you know, I was, you know, what I was supposed to be when I grew up, and from that recovery house I started working in a treatment center, and I started working with families, and I met a fabulous man who left us about a month ago, left this earth, Jay Utes, who was also on this program a few months back, who took me under his wing and said, you know what, I'm gonna show you how you can get in there and get somebody out. And you know, thank goodness for that. And that was my aha moment, you know. So now, many hundreds of these later, and thousands of families being able to work with and represent a solution and hope. You know, I feel like I'm probably the most blessed person with the best job. And I know everybody's saying that as well. And that's the beauty of this, right? I mean, if you don't have the passion and you don't truly want to help somebody, this is the wrong business for you to be in. And, you know, morning, noon, and night, relapse doesn't work just 9 to 5. And, you know, I think the important part is that, you know, we can all stand together. I do a lot of advocacy. Fortunate to do some public speaking in regards to this, and you know, I just want to start to see some of those numbers go down. You know, there's a website, 144 a day, and just a few months ago that website said 129 a day, and
actually I believe it's 149 a day.
So it continues to go up, and that number, it represents the number daily of drug and alcohol overdoses, of which 70% are opioid related. And, you know, that's alarming, because if you put that into perspective, that's a loaded 747 dropping out of the sky every 3 days. And I guarantee you, if a loaded 747 was dropping out of the skies, there'd be a lot of people having to answer a lot of questions. And, you know, we need to hold our representatives to the fire and hold them responsible to continue to work with us to, you know, find a solution that works. And I think we've made a lot of headway, but I think we have a long way to go, and I don't think we're out of this by the long shot. So, you know, what I always urge everybody to do is let's keep talking. Okay. Let's put everything out on the table. Let's keep representing a solution, and if it's not working, let's do something different, but let's just keep moving one foot in front of the other. But thanks again, John, for having me out.
Go ahead, make my day.
Oh, real boy. Quick, since my wife is listening at home and Rob threw a shout out, when I get home I'll get crushed, but it's important. My wife Valerie stayed with me through pretty rough couple of years when all my behavior and my addiction came to light. And there was a good chance that I was gonna go to jail for a long time. And she stuck with me. So shout out to you, Val, thanks.
So you can go home tonight now.
I can.
Yeah.
You'll be safe when you get home after that.
Well, I wanna just say, who's going to
do? We got like 8 minutes left.
Yeah, man. I know we do. Relax.
If I was any more relaxed, I'd be snoring.
Well, I'm glad you're not. It's great. I mean, to work with all these wonderful people that I get a chance to every day is just incredible.
To think that 4 years ago I was in a room full of people that couldn't stand their jobs, and yeah, now I'm right? in a room full of people with people that love their jobs.
How's that for flipping the script, huh? This is just amazing.
Holy shnikes.
What else you got under there? Give us a bizarre
one. I have no life, man. I could sit here and have a whole conversation and never talk, okay?
His daughter's shaking her head.
Yeah, she knows.
Does he do it to you at home? Is you just hear this stuff all day?
Yeah, he's busy on that.
And how many times did you hear our new opening?
Too many.
So what you do, run it by them first before you...
No, they're forced to hear it over and over again while I compile it.
You must be a real treat at home.
Yeah.
But this is great. It was a great, really great show tonight. I'm thankful for our guests. I mean, just week by week, it's just, I'm surrounded by people who always lift me up. And that's just absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, if I would have made a list of what I wanted when I got clean, it would have been real. I would have been cheating myself so much because I got so much more than I ever dreamed possible.
So before we go, John, if there was a first responder or someone who needed some help or guidance or help with their addiction, is there a way they can get in touch with you? Or?
Sure, absolutely. They can get in touch with me directly. My cell number is 215-833-1572. Or they could go to our website, which is frontlinerehab.com.
Rob, how about you? If somebody was seeking help or needed an intervention?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I represent a company called Recovery Centers of America, and our number is 1-800-RECOVERY. You can't get any easier than that. We're open 24/7 in regards to our call center, and somebody will be there ready and willing to help you. My cell phone number is 484-716-1435 as well. You know, we'll be able to talk some things through and figure out what's going on. And our website's 1-800-RECOVERY as well, .com. Thanks.
I've used all that at some point in time in the last recent time.
And my phone number, you can reach me directly at 856-677-6545. My phone is always on. Also, people message me through Facebook a lot. For some reason, a lot of people who reach out to me don't actually have minutes on their phone, so you can reach me at Mary McGregor on Facebook. And my phone is always on. I answer all the time. Yeah. My phone never dies.
My phone's always on.
Mine, too. I like them 3 o'clock a.m. calls.
I'll be answering them.
They're the best.
But I give him Rob's number.
With 3 a.m. calls, just dial 1-800-RECOVERY.
I get
I will get back to you by 7 a.m.
That's the number I give him. I give him the 1-800-RECOVERY.
When a sponsor calls me at 3 a.m., you better be dying.
Yeah. I tell the guys, why are you calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're drunk? Why didn't you call me at 11 before you picked up?
That's right. That's right.
Because picking up the phone and dialing those 10 digits is the hardest thing that people can do.
That's right.
I remember I had a sponsor, my first sponsor, and he was speaking at a convention, and it was getting close to the time he was supposed to start speaking. Right? And everybody's saying, where's your sponsor? Is he coming? Well, I said, yeah, he was out in the hall last I saw him. He walks in with a phone and puts the phone down on the desk where he was sharing. And he said, that is the most important thing that any addict can do. And I thought, he's really losing his mind. But it was probably the best thing that he had to say the whole time, you know? Because that's important. If you can't reach out, you know, we don't know what's going on with you, you know? I relapsed after 20 years because I couldn't let you all know how much pain I was in, and I couldn't ask you for help when it was all around me. I mean, people that would go through the trenches with me. It was available to me, and I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you got back on a horse, right?
Yeah, I did. Grateful for the opportunity. Didn't let this one go by. I haven't looked back. I live in the now.
And you're picking that phone up, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so important. I always tell the clients that I work with, you know, you need to be on the phone every day talking to your sponsor and at least 3 or 4 other people in recovery, because when things are going good, if you're not doing that, when things don't go good or you get in a certain funk or feeling, you're never going to pick up that phone if you haven't already done it.
Exactly. Like Rob and I played 1 or 2 phone tags today.
We did.
Mm-hmm. You know, but when I pulled up, he was calling me, and I'm on the phone with somebody else, and I'm trying to text somebody. It's insane. And then I had to go back and look at an email for some more information that I needed, so it was just, and I'm driving all at the same time.
Oh, goody.
I'm so crazy. Okay. Another installment of Living Clean and Sober.
And that's all she wrote.
So I want to thank everybody for listening. If you did listen, you didn't call, but that's okay. It's tough to dial 10 digits. I want to thank again from the bottom of my heart Mary, John, and Rob, and Sam over there. How you doing? Don't, next time, please don't talk so much, okay?
Hold it down over there.
Artie, great job as always.
Thank you, sir.
And I want to thank everybody for listening. And until next week, be well.
Say goodbye to this chapter of my ever-changing life, and these mistakes, the path is long, and I'm sure I'll answer for them when I'm gone. Sun won't touch my face. Tell the ones who cared enough that I finally left this place that's been so cold. Look at my face. All the stories it will tell I can't erase. A little something to remind you when I'm gone, when I'm gone. The road to hell along the way paid with good intentions, so they say. And some believe that no good deed goes unpunished in the end, or so it seems. So when the day comes in and the sun won't touch my tell the ones who cared enough that I finally left this place that's been so cold. Look at my face. All the stories it will tell I can't erase. Chapter of my ever-changing life, and these mistakes, the path was long, and I'm sure I'll answer for them when I'm gone, when I'm gone.